Okay, so, you know, we had been discussing the beginning of the David-Goliath encounter, and it basically starts out in a very haphazard way, in the sense that David wasn't supposed to be there the whole time, right? Because David is sort of commuting back and forth between Shaul and his father. He's still a shepherd. Then he's working in the palace, and he has this very unusual role in the palace, where he was brought in basically as a music therapist, and then his role expanded from there to include, you know, basically being Shaul's attendant, what is referred to as a nosei kelim. But he's still really young, so this is an adolescent. He's constantly referred to as a na'ar, and so he's not, you know, really of military age. And he ends up on the battlefield, just to review, again, in a very circuitous way. Anybody happen to remember? How did he even get there? What was he doing there?
Yes. His father sent him to bring stuff to his brothers.
Right. Right. Supplies. It's really interesting, you know. I think it surprises us from a purely American point of view. But when there are these, you know, military operations in Israel, it's not uncommon for parents to drive to the front and drop off, like, supplies. You know, this happened in 2014 in Tzuk Eitan. It's hard for us to imagine as Americans, who think, like, you know, the army has surplus of everything. So this is, like, you know, an ancient tradition, effectively, and it's a small country, so there is such a thing as a closed military zone, but you can get pretty close. I'm sure everybody here remembers, you know, people were donating, like, you know, socks and things of that nature. So David ends up there for very, like I say, haphazard reasons and in a circuitous way. And then his brother attacks him. Right? His brother basically says, you know, this is like military voyeurism. Like, what are you doing here? And he refers to him as somebody of roa lev, of a wicked heart. And remember, when we started with the whole David story, what we're talking about is how David's of pure heart, and even though he'll go on to make mistakes, and some very significant ones, the thing about David is that his heart is always with the Lord. His heart is always with God. And we kept on noting that his family doesn't seem to either pay much attention to him or think very highly of him. And so he's just attacked, you know, by his eldest brother Eliab, the one, by the way, who you remember when Shmuel looked at him, he said, oh, this is for sure the guy, because he was tall. He was like the Shaul 2.0. He kind of looked the part, and Eliab, you know, he may be jealous of David at this point. So that's a little bit of the background. So remember, David starts, you know, reacting very strongly, because not so much of the situation that, okay, so there's this giant Goliath going out every morning and evening, and we noted, like, you know, Kriyat Shema, the Gemara says, to try to, you know, cause the Jews to lose faith. But he's very offended that Goliath is cursing God, cursing the Jewish people as God's people. Very angry about that. And he basically says, you know, why isn't anybody doing anything about this? And the answer is self-evident. Well, you know, nobody's doing anything about it because nobody wants to get killed. And David has this very youthful confidence, and the word starts going around the camp that, like, David, you know, wants to engage the, you know, Plishti giant. So recall, one of the last things that we talked about is that Shaul talks to David and says, you know, this guy has been killing people since before you were born. You're a na'ar, and he's been killing people for decades. Like, you know, I'm not going to send you out to be slaughtered by this person. Remember, Shaul was described as somebody who loved David very much. So it is not, you know, something that he's going to sign off on. And then David launches into this story, and this is where we concluded last week, about, it's very well intentioned. It doesn't really, like, this, you know, establish his credentials, but what are the, what does David say his credentials are to fight, you know, against this giant?
Beats up on lions and bears.
Right, but he said that when the lion and the bear came and they dragged away a sheep, so he attacked the lion and the bear and he rescued the sheep. Right, which is great, you know, and shows that he's super dedicated as a shepherd, but may not alleviate concerns of his, like, you know, immediate and expeditious demise if he's going to actually fight Goliath. But again, this it's very sincere. He doesn't, for a moment, you know, see this as, like, you know, an irrelevant part of his past. He really means it. Like, you know, you see, I can do it. And Shaul listens to this, and he doesn't really respond. So then, like, you know, David tries again, and he says, well, you know, it's because God saved me from the lion. God saved me from the bear. So if God can save me from the lion, and God can save me from the bear, right? It's all about God with David and the fact that the Plishti is cursing God, and he keeps on repeating the name of Hashem over and over again, as we said last week. It says, so certainly God can save me from the Plishti. So Shaul says, okay, go. Vashem Ya'ima. And the God that you put so much faith in, you know, he should be with you. And that's exactly where we left off. Vayomer Shaul David Leich Vashem Ya'ima. Now this is again, that's where we, last pasuk we got up to. Very symbolic now. Vayalbeish Shaul at David Madab. So this is 5 lines from the bottom, the front side. So Shaul, you know, loans David, you know, his military gear. V'natan kova nechoshet al rosho, his helmet, v'yalbesho toshriyon, and his armor. So there's a very specific and simple reason that David doesn't have anything with him. Well, that's like we're going to get to that in a second. That's why he can't use the borrowed stuff. But why doesn't David have his own gear? Not in the army. He was just delivering a package, right? So the whole thing is like this very, you have to imagine this scene, right? He's not even in the army, and he ends up wearing Shaul, who's this really, you know, compared to Goliath, he may not be a giant, but he's the tallest guy in the, you know, in the Jewish people, and he's the one, of course, who should be out there. So imagine this almost absurd scenario. You have the tallest Plishti is Goliath. The tallest Jew is Shaul, right? He's the leader. He should be fighting against him, right? So instead of Shaul fighting, you've got Shaul's armor on this kid, who's then going to fight, who's literally going to fight this giant. So again, you know, David is really fearless. He's filled with the sense of faith in God, which we'll see is going to be rewarded. But just imagine this scene from Shaul's point of view. Like, this must have felt a little bit funny. Just imagine, you know, some high school kid comes up to you at work and it's like, you know, there's some really serious problem going on. And he says, you know, well, God helped me, you know, last summer in camp, and I think that I can really do the job. And if you wouldn't mind just handing over your uniform right now. It's just, it's an odd thing. But I mean, of course it doesn't fit, like, you know. And that, so that's what happened. So it doesn't fit. So Vayachor David et Charbo me'al madav Vayol alecha, and he tries to walk, but he can't. He literally can't. It's like the theater of the absurd. He can't even move. So forget about fighting a Plishti. He can't, like, he's not able to move. Right? Kilonisa. Vayomer David al Shaul lo uchal alechet ba'ela kilonisiti Vayisirem David me'alav. And David takes off Shaul's vestments, his armor, his sword, and all of the, you know, military accessories. So of course there's something, you know, very, like I say, the theater of the absurd about this scene. There's also something very powerful in the symbolism. You can't miss it, right? David is going to, of course, step into the shoes of Shaul, but he's not going to be wearing Shaul's clothes. No, this is going to be a different kind of a thing. He's not Shaul's height. He's not his size. He's a different model altogether. And you could try to put Shaul's clothes onto David, but it doesn't really fit. It'll never really fit. And that's okay, because we need a new model anyway. So what does David do? Vayikach maklo, he takes his stick, biyado, vayivchar lo chamisha chalukei avanim min hanachal, and he finds 5 smooth stones from the riverbed, vayasem otam b'chli haroim asher lo v'alkut v'kalo biyado. And he just takes them, he puts them in his little shepherd's pouch. So he goes to fight, not as a soldier, but as a shepherd. Right? Exactly the way that he described it. Remember, I was a shepherd, and I fought against the Lion and the Bear, he feels more like himself. Right? And he's got his slingshot. This is the Kaloviado. Right? Vayigash Elav Plishti. And he fearlessly goes, like, Vayigash Elav Yehuda. Right? This descendant of Yehuda is, you know, willing to go and challenge this very powerful person. The Malbim points out, he has a really interesting observation. He says, anytime Vayigash is used in Tanakh, it always implies somebody of much less strength or much less station who has to approach somebody very powerful. Like, you know, Vayigash Elav Yehuda was the example that came to mind. So Vayilech HaPlishti Haloch VeKarevel David. So the Plishti, Goliath, so he's getting closer and closer to David. Va'ish Noseat Sina Lefanav. But he can't exactly see David. Why? Because his vision is obscured by the guy who's walking in front of him holding his shield. Right? Like, it's a human-sized shield because Goliath is so big. So Vayabeda Plishti, so he looks really closely. Vayirat David, and he sees David, this teenager, standing there with a stick and a pouch of stones and, like, holding a slingshot. Vayiv Zehu. Like, Vayiv as Esa Vesad Bechorad. And he was just filled with scorn. Because he looks at him, and, you know, he's been waiting for the Jews to send out some mighty warrior, and they get a 10th grader. Ki hayanar, the admonim yifei mara. And the guy looks like he's never been in a battle in his whole life. And, you know, he's just really offended by this. You know, in terms of, you know, martial culture, so it's considered a very serious insult, you know, to, if somebody's calling for a duel, instead of sending out some warrior, you send out some kid. So, you know, he's really angry about this. He feels that his honor has been diminished. Like, what's going to be proven by this? And he's been calling out for 40 days, you know, some send somebody to fight me, you know, send your best warrior, and, you know, whoever wins, so that will be, you know, the outcome of the war. And this is nothing. You know, this is, you know, a terrible insight. So, Vayomer HaPlishti al David HaKelev Anochi, he's really angry. You consider me as a dog? Ki ata ba'ilai b'maklot, with a stick that you'd fight, like, if a dog was coming, you'd hit the dog with a stick. It's like, you know, and he's so angry. Vayikalel HaPlishti al David Belohav. And he starts cursing. So remember, up until now, he's been cursing, you know, the God of the Jews and the Jewish people. But now he starts cursing David. He's really angry, you know, about this whole situation. He says to David, come here, I'm so angry about this, I'm going to kill you, and I'm going to feed you to the birds and to the animals. So, I don't know if any of you saw this, but Malcolm Gladwell put out a book a few years ago where he makes an argument that I'm somewhat skeptical of, that Goliath had some underlying medical conditions that actually prevented him from really approaching David. So that's why he says to David, L'chai lai, come to me. And that's why he needs somebody to hold a shield in front of him. So if you're familiar with that approach, that you'll notice certain maybe clues along the way. But the whole thing seems relatively speculative to me, so I'm going to go in a more conventional direction and try to understand, you know, matters, and we always think of it from David's perspective, but to try to explore it a little bit from Goliath's perspective. So I think Goliath is saying, like, he's not going to actually attack the kid, right? So I think the reason he says, L'chai lai, is if David's going to run away at this point, he's going to let him run away. You know, he's not going to, but if David is going to attack him, he says, I'm going to, you know, destroy you and, you know, make a big scene of the whole thing. So I'm not sure that Goliath at this point really thinks that there's going to be a confrontation. And he thinks that this is some, you know, what's that?
A joke.
Yeah, like a way of denigrating him, basically, you know, and mocking him and making a joke out of the whole thing by sending out a kid. So Vayomer David al HaPlishti. So David says, you know, again, you know, he's taking this very seriously. So you come at me, you know, with your sword and with your spear, and your lance. And I come to you, as this year is titled, with nothing other than the name of the Almighty. That's how I approach this. That's how I approach you. You blaspheme God of Israel, and that's why I'm here. Hayom hazeh yisagercha Hashem bi'adi. Again, see the term Hashem bolded. Right? V'ikiticha v'asiroti et roshcha mi'alecha. And I'm going to chop off your head. V'natati peger machane plishtim hayom hazeh. Le'ov ha-shamayim v'lechayad ha'aretz. You will not feed me to the birds. I will feed you to the birds. V'yadu kol ha'aretz ki yesh Elohim v'Yisrael. Right, and everybody will know, meaning the Plishtim will all know, that there is a God in Israel. You can't just, you know, curse the God of the Jews and curse the Jews. But also, David says, and this is really significant, right, V'yedu kol ha'kahal hazeh, and all of the Jews, this gathering, this nation, the Jewish people, kilo v'cherev u'b'chanid Yehoshia Hashem, they have to learn a lesson too. Because my killing you will not just be a message to the Plishtim and the surrounding nations, but maybe most of all, be a message to the Jewish people that their paradigm has been in error. Namely, that they kept on thinking the whole time, how can we find somebody strong enough, big enough, fast enough, a warrior, to fight Goliath? That was the wrong model. Right? That God doesn't save through the sword and through the spear. Ki la Hashem ha-milchama. God fights, we're just his messengers. V'natan etchem biyadenu. So you see that David is actually engaging in this discourse with the Plishti, right? And he's telling him, you know, my people are very confused. My people are very confused. They think that this is a military confrontation in the pure sense of the term. But what this is really about is God, the God that you've been cursing, and the God that I'm here to defend, to sanctify his name, effectively. And yes, the nations of the world will then know, ki yesh Elokim b'Yisrael, that you can't just mess with the Jews, that Jewish blood is not going to be cheap. But equally, the Jews will then get it. Right? So I'll just point out the following. You remember how Shaul, time and time again, was petrified of the nation. He couldn't ever lead. He always just took on whatever their view was. So what do you see? David is very far from being the king at this point. Very far, right? He's been anointed, but he won't be the king for the entire rest of Shmuel Aleph until the beginning of Shmuel Bet, and even then there's going to be a civil war. But what do you see? David doesn't hesitate to point out that the people have it all wrong. This is a leadership quality. Leadership means that sometimes you have to be able to say that the situation is not being assessed properly, and it's not going to be popular, but I'm going to lead. Instead of just taking a poll and figuring out, you know, where everybody is and, you know, just following along and, you know, sort of charting a safe course. So I think that you see here, you know, in the subtext, I mean, the obvious thing is David is brave and he's willing to, you know, fight Goliath. I mean, I think in some ways even more important than that is that David's able to understand that there's a deficiency in the people, that they're not really understanding the situation, and that Goliath, and killing Goliath is not really what's important. But the message to get across that, you know, there's a God, and this God, you allowed this God to be denigrated for 40 days and 40 nights, he's trying to send a message just as much to the Jewish people, just as much to his family, just as much to his tribe, just as much to Shaul as he is to the Plishtim. So for David, this confrontation is really not even fundamentally about who's going to, you know, beat Goliath. He doesn't see it in that sense. He sees it in theological terms, as what's going to be with the God of Israel. So the enemies of the Jews should know it, but even more importantly, the Jews should know it for themselves. So at this point, you know, after this whole drasha that he was forced to listen to, so Goliath is now really angry. So it's not only they send the high schooler, but he gives drashas too. Like, what could be worse? Okay? So, Vayaki kama plishti, Vayelech vayikrav likratavid. He says, I'm really going to kill him, right? So he starts moving, you know, in David's direction. Vayimaher David, and David springs into action. He goes very quickly. Vayaru tamarachal likrata plishti. And now David runs directly at the plishti. So I think that this speech, like I was saying before, I think had David walked away, I think he probably still could have walked away until he gave this speech. This speech sets the Plishti off, and now they're going to have this confrontation. So David starts to move very quickly. Vayishlach David et yado al hakeli. So David, you know, sticks his hand in full stride as he's running into his little sack, into his little pouch, Vaykach misham evan, he takes one of his five stones, like literally the hand-picked stones, vayikala, and he puts it in the slingshot, vayachar ha-plishti al mitzcho, and he hits the plishti with this stone, you know, going very, very, very fast, right in his forehead. Okay, and it literally stays there. It penetrates right through the front of the forehead, and the plishti staggers. He doesn't fall backwards because it's not from impact. He's staggering around, and eventually, you know, he's got something protruding, you know, into the front of his skull, and eventually collapses forward. Now, what's interesting about this is that this is only the second time in Sefer Shmuel that we have this image. Remember the first time when the Plishtim took the Aron and they put it in the Beit Dagon, the house of their fish god? Because remember, the Plishtim were seafaring people, so they worshipped, you know, a fish god. Makes sense. So remember that Dagon, in the morning, the Kohanei Dagon go in and he's on his face. So the Navi is pointing out to this Goliath, who was like a god, to the Plishtim, right? They think that he's going to save them, whatever, just like Dagon. So, you know, if you're doing the analogy here, you know, Dagon is replaced by Goliath, and the Aron is replaced by David. Right? The Aron represents the God of Israel. And who represents here the God of Israel? David. He keeps on talking about how important it is to defend the glory of the God of Israel. Okay. So, Vayechazak David min ha-plishti ba-kelo va-even. So the narrator comments here that David was able to overtake this plishti using a stone and a slingshot. Vayachar plishti vayimitehu v'cherev ein biyad David. David never had his own sword here. Okay. Vayarutz David vayamodel haplishti. So David goes and he stands over Goliath, who's, you know, fallen and is dying from this wound to the skull. Vayikachet charbo. So he takes the sword of Goliath. And he takes it out of its sheath, and he finishes off the process of killing Goliath, who was already in the throes of dying. And he cuts off the head of Goliath. And at this point, the Plishtim saw that Goliath had, you know, was on the ground, decapitated, and they run. Vayariu vayirdefu et haplishtim. They're inspired. They chase after the plishtim. Adbo achagai, literally until the plishti territories. Vaad sharei Ekron, to the very gates of Ekron. Vayipuchal le plishtim ederech sharayim. Vaad gad vaad Ekron. And plishtim are, you know, strewn all over the field of battle. Vayashuvu bnei Yisrael midaloka charei plishtim. Vayashosu et machanehem. Right, the plishtim had obviously abandoned their camps. And so the Jews plundered the camp as well. So Vaykach David at Rosh HaPlishti, Vayivyehu Yerushalayim, Ve'et Kelav Sam Be'ohalo. So this means that David took Goliath's head, and he would eventually bring it to Yerushalayim. There's going to be a scene that happens in between that we're going to get to now, but the eventual destination of the head of Goliath is actually Yerushalayim. Now Yerushalayim obviously has not played a very big role in the story, but Yerushalayim will, of course, be the city that David will choose to be the capital city to unify the entire Jewish people. Remember, it's right on the boundary between the territory of Yehuda and Binyamin. And therefore, like, you know, a very good historical parallel, like Washington, D.C., right? Why did Washington become the capital? There's nothing there. It's a swamp. Okay? Because it was meant to unify the northern colonies and the southern colonies. It wasn't a developed city like Philadelphia or New York, but it was right there in the middle. So if the whole idea was to unite Yehuda with the tribes of Israel, the northern tribes, the tribes basically of Bnei Rachel, right? The large tribes of Menashe and Ephraim and Binyamin, so you needed a capital city that was much more centrally located. So the relationship between David and Yerushalayim, David who's from Beit Lechem, is from just south of Yerushalayim. If you know Beit Lechem, what is it, 15-minute drive to Yerushalayim, 12-minute drive to Yerushalayim? Really, right there, the southern edge of Yerushalayim. So David and his relationship with Yerushalayim begin with the decapitated head of Goliath. Just bear that in mind, okay? So right now, Yerushalayim is a city that's not even under full Jewish control. If you remember, who's there? The Yebusim, okay? that the Yebusim were never, it was a very fortified city. David will actually have to fight a battle of conquest against Jerusalem, but we're not quite there just yet. Okay, so there's this now a very cryptic end to the story of David and Goliath. David is holding the head of the giant. B'chirot Shaul at David yotzei likrat ha'plishti. So there's like sort of this split screen. Shaul standing at a distance watching David approach the plishti, right? We're now going back a few moments in time when this confrontation was actually going on. So Shaul says, Amar l'Avner sarat tzava, he says to his chief general, general of the army, Avner, who was a relation of his, okay, cousin, Ben Miza Hanar Avner. Who is this kid? Vayomer Avner, Chai Nafshecha HaMelech Im Yadati. He basically takes an oath and says, I have no idea who he is. So Vayomer HaMelech Shalata Ben Mizeh Ha'alam. You have to ask, you know, whose kid is this? What's so odd about this? Just so bizarre about this.
No, it's David.
Right. David is literally his Nosei Kelim. Not only that, but, you know, even if he didn't know him before, which he did, and he's described as loving him very much, what's... Even if none of that were true, like, let's say they had no, you know, past relationship, he hadn't been his music therapist turned Nosei Kelim, what's...
He knows the guy's name.
Certainly.
He's asking a deeper question. What's the deal?
Okay, so that's the way the Radak interprets, is that he starts thinking about, like, what family does he come from? Is this person going to be the king one day? So, like, that's the rabbinic interpretation. The Gemara says that he's starting to try to figure out that maybe David's really going to be the king. And he's already thinking along those lines, because there's something very unusual about him. And he knows, of course, you know, that David is Yishai's son. So that's the Radak likes that very much. The Gemara Yevamos develops that point at length. The question then is, how do you understand Avner's response? Avner says, Chai nafshecha ha'melach im yadati. I have no idea. But presumably anybody that would have known Shaul should have known David at this point. Not only that, but anybody who was around Shaul, and we can assume, I think, reasonably, that his chief of staff would have been there when that whole scene happened, when David and Shaul were talking about this. Like, Shaul sent David into battle. He had that whole awkward scene with Shaul's clothes and his armor. So, it's very, very cryptic. Cheshuv David me'akoret ha'plishti. When David came back, literally right after the battle, v'yikach oto Avner, so Avner grabs him. Vayivyeu lifnei Shaul, when he brings him in front of Shaul, v'rosh ha'plishti biyado. Later, David would bring it to Yerushalayim, but David is actually holding Goliath's head right now. So Avner, Shaul, David, and Goliath's head. Okay. Vayomer lav Shaul, and Shaul says to him, Ben miata ha'na'ar, who are you? And again, he calls him a na'ar. He still looks at him as a na'ar, as a kid. Vayomer David, so David says, Ben Avdecha, I am not just your servant, but I am the son of your servant, right? Even one level, you know, removed, so to speak, from even being your servant. Vayomer David ben Avdecha Yishai Beit Halachmi, from Beitha. So, I think there's something really, really fascinating here, which is that Shaul seems to have trouble understanding either what happened, who he's talking to, and the people around him may not be so comfortable pointing that out, right? Avner says, I don't know, I don't really know who he is. So it's really interesting. The Metzudas David, one of the more recent, not one that we showed in the Achronim, let's say, just a few hundred years ago, so he thinks that this is actually part of the Ruach Ra'ah, the mental illness that Shaul was suffering from, that he's starting to show signs of lapses in cognition. I'm sure that's true. The question then is, but he seems to sincerely not know who he is. He says to Avner, who is he? And Avner doesn't want to say. So in this case, I actually think that the Metzudah is onto something, that part of Sha'ul's Ruach Ra'az, you know, it's very often occurs that people have complex forms of mental illness, is that there is, you know, cognitive decline. Sometimes it could be permanent, sometimes it could be intermittent, sometimes it's treatable, but that can be, you know, a complication or symptomatic of whatever it is that Sha'ul is experiencing. Sort of going back and forth between a clear thinking state and a state of confusion. And so you have this almost surreal scene where David is holding the decapitated head of the Plishti giant, and the person that, you know, took him from, you know, the flock, so to speak, to the palace itself, is looking at him and saying, "Who are you?" And he says calmly, "Bena Abdecha Yishai Beit Halachmi. I am the son of a man named Yishai from Beit Lachan." Now, if I were to ask you what's the most impressive thing David did in this chapter, most people would say he killed Goliath. Maybe somebody else would say, you know, he defended the honor of the God of Israel. Those all would be acceptable answers. But I actually think that in some sense, the most interesting and in some ways most impressive thing that he does here is how he handles this conversation. Mm-hmm. This is a person who is the king of Israel, who's manifestly ill, who's not clear on who he's talking to, even though David has spent many hours, right, in very close proximity to him, right? And David's a very young person. You know, we can maybe presume he hasn't seen anything like this before. And Sha'ul says to him, "Who are you?" You know, very confused. And he says, "I am the son of Yishai from Beit Lechem." Does it, handles it beautifully. Handles it beautifully. And meanwhile, he's holding the decapitated head of the Plishti giant in his hand. So talk about, you know, David is always so interesting within our tradition because he's a combination of so many different things. He's a warrior, he's also a poet. He's a king, he's a family man. It's all these different dimensions. And this scene, for me, captures so much of it, right? There are very few people who would be willing to go and fight Goliath and be able to fight him successfully and, you know, decapitate him and walk around with his head. Separately, there are very few people who, at a young age, when confronted by an adult who's going through some kind of an emotional disturbance with symptoms of cognitive lapse, who would be able to handle that situation reasonably well and treat the person with respect. David, holding on to the decapitated head of the Plishti, confronted with the king of Israel, who he knows very well, who's having this very strange moment, handles himself with incredible grace. So on the one hand, he has like extreme vigor in the military sense, and on the other hand, this kind of remarkable grace at the interpersonal level. So in terms of David's capacity to synthesize so many different things, his pure and deep and earnest sense that it's intolerable that the God of Israel should be blasphemed, his sense of need for Kiddushim Shemayim, the need to get that message across, not just to the Plishtim, but primarily to the Jewish people, like we have in this week's Parsha, V'nikdashti b'tov b'nei Israel, that Kiddush Hashem really is primarily for us, so that we understand it, and, you know, the fact that he can do it successfully, and the fact that, at the end, he's not looking for any glory, but ben abdecha yishai, ben halachmi. Okay, so he doesn't know who I am, he doesn't, you know, panic and say, "Hey, you sent me here, you know, whatever happened, remember last week, a guy who killed the you know, Goliath was supposed to get, you know, to marry the daughter and, you know, all that." He doesn't like say, you know, "Hey, where's my prize?" He just says, "Ben Abdecha Yishai Beit Halachmi." Yeah, Daniel.
What do you think the purpose of the drasha to Goliath is?
To me, that's why David was there the whole time. I think David really cares about one thing from beginning to end, and that is the God of Israel. And when he hears that, as we were discussing last week, when he hears the Plishti blaspheme the God of Israel, he's sent into a very, he's exercised by it. And, you know, what he tells the Plishti is basically that's exactly why he's there. Because you've been blaspheming and cursing the God of Israel, and even worse, the Jews have been tolerating it. So you have to be stopped, but you have to be stopped not really for military reasons. You have to be stopped so that everybody knows Ki Yesh Elokim b'Yisrael, because this is all a very big Chil Hashem what's going on, and the Jews have to get this into their head also. I think that's the whole point. In other words, you know, in some sense the speech is for David more significant than the military confrontation. David was, I think, very much detested by his family. Maybe they saw this quality in him, like he, you know, had something of a preacher in him, and he felt these things, and they resented that. And sort of, we discussed a little bit of the parallel with Yosef last week, that Yosef is this big dreamer, and David seems to have these very big dreams, and their families don't like it. But unlike Yosef, who really, I think, sought power, I don't think that's of particular interest to David. I think David is from the very beginning, this person who has this relationship with God. See, this person authoring Sefer Tehillim, which is all about a relationship with God, and he's so viscerally bothered when the God of Israel is blasphemed. And so, almost unlike anybody else, you know, when it's all done, and the person that sent him, the person who really should have been taking care of this himself, Shaul, is having some kind of a moment, you know, a medical moment, David is not fazed by it. Because he wasn't like he was doing this for the recognition anyway. And he's literally not recognized at the end of the story. And he certainly doesn't get the reward, so to speak, that was, you know, promised. So David is there for the right reason, I think, as Navi tries to present it. He's there to protect the honor of the God of Israel. And of course, this is the, and I guess just with this line I'll conclude, this is like the irony of the whole story, right? We spoke so much in the first half of the year about Shmuel's objections to the idea of a human king, because in Shmuel's mind, it was really binary. If the Jews have a king, that king is God. If the Jews have a human king, God is not their king. And, you know, Shmuel kind of had a point there, right? It's like, so the only king that we could really, you know, have and stay within the guidelines of Melech Malchei Hamlachim is a king that existed, so to speak, for the sake of glorifying the actual king. And so David is still, again, very far from being the king. And he certainly doesn't think himself that way. How does he refer to himself? Ben Avdecha. Not even an Eved, the son of an Eved. Very far from being a king. But there's one thing that's super clear, is that what he really cares about is the glory of God. And so, in all these different ways, you see the leadership qualities there. He's the unusual person that could actually be a Jewish king, insofar as he sort of lives to further the glory of the ultimate king, of God's kingship. And all the while, he's able to see the flaw in the people in a way that Shaul never could, because the people, you know, aren't able to recognize, you know, what a terrible thing it is that Goliath has been cursing God and cursing the Jewish people, and what that means in theological terms. And David is really, really very critical of that in a way that we never see Shaul coming out and criticizing the Jewish people. So, God willing, next week, right, regular week. So we'll pick it up there. Now that David has sort of burst onto the scene, this very dramatic moment, but we're already seeing that it wasn't like then, you know, Shaul went and hugged him and, you know, wow, what a great job you did, you saved the people of Israel. It was this incredibly bizarre scene. And so where does David go from here? Where does Shaul go from here? But where does Shaul and David together go from here? That's going to be the interesting story that's going to play out in the weeks to come. Is starting next week. Okay. So again, next week we'll start probably 8:30, and again, we will finish by 9 o'clock. Say, I went 3 minutes over.